play.
Sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building. Nigga.
Yeah. It's alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast. This week, we'll be previewing the 2019 Charles Schwab Challenge, formerly the Dean and DeLuca, formerly the million other things that has been called. It's unbelievable the names that have gone on here since 1946. But we'll also recap the PGA Championship. You can check out the podcast on Twitter at AlwaysPressDFS. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods, Jesse. How we doing, man?
Doing good, dude. How are you?
Not too bad. It's been weird. You know, I'm going to do it to you for once. It's been raining in California in May.
Been lucky, dude. The last few days, it's not been raining. I actually played in a golf tournament this weekend, but it was like 40 fucking mile per hour winds. So I'd almost rather have the rain than the winds. It was wild to play in.
Yeah, where I live, I think I talked about it before, in the afternoon starts at about 2 o'clock in the summertime. It starts howling, a north wind every day. And our summer league starts this Thursday. We tee off and play 9 holes at 4:30 in the afternoon on Thursdays. And certain days are okay, like 15-mile-an-hour winds we're happy with. There's other days where it's just complete, just gale force fun. Like you're hitting like 3 woods into like 180-yard par 3.
Yeah, that's rough, dude.
It's interesting, man.
I'd rather not, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and then it gets us out of the house. Yeah. So, that's coming up. But, yeah, PGA Championship, PGA Major Champion again, Brooks Koepka. Absolutely amazing. Back-to-back PGA Championships. He's got back-to-back U.S. Opens. You can listen to all the other podcasts, all the other deals. They just listed off everything he's accomplished so far. 4 majors in his last, 23 overall events, like 7 total major championships. He's the first ever to win the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship back-to-back. He's only like the 5th guy to go from start to finish here, so on and so forth. It's absolutely insane what he has done. What were your thoughts on his weekend there at Bethpage Black?
Yeah, it was impressive, dude, from beginning to end. What did he open with, 63?
Yeah, he feasted.
And everybody else was like just trying to make pars. And the thing is about that 63, I watched most of it, the vast majority of it, and he missed, 2 or 3 putts that I really thought were makeable. He started off with a bomb right out the gate on 1 from the fringe, and I just kind of felt like it was on from there. And who knows how the tournament goes if he misses that and runs it by 10 feet and bogeys or something like that. Who knows? But he drilled it, and it was just – I mean, it was impressive from start to finish. I didn't get to watch much on the weekend. Of course, there wasn't really any drama on Saturday, but I did get to listen to it coming home from a golf tournament there on Sunday, at least before DJ kind of bogeyed a couple there and pretty much sealed the deal for Brooks. But, man, dude is impressive. That is for sure.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. I got to watch most of Sundays, and it was just two guys. Like, if anybody's going to challenge Brooks on Sunday, because I was telling my buddies even after his Thursday round at 7-under, I'm like, if he plays even golf, he wins this thing. Like, he's that far ahead of the rest of the people out there. And then Saturday he did his thing, played even golf. But Sunday it got a little dicey because the weather got nasty. And if anybody's ever going to challenge him, it was going to be DJ, because that course was built for accurate bombers. That was about the only way you were going to survive out there in those conditions. When it got windy – and that's what happened is DJ, went through the wind, played well, but then started getting some bogeys. When Brooks got to those holes, like, the wind just died. It just stopped. It was pretty crazy. I think you're saying one, like, him and DJ both hit driver off the tee, I think, on 16. And Brooks had a wedge in, or I guess maybe it was like an 8-iron. And DJ was going like a 4 or 5 because of the wind differences. It was just a game changer, stuff like that. But it was pretty crazy. DJ was only one of the top – I think the only guy to go under par in the top 10. He completed the runner-up Grand Slam, which is a whole other conversation. But Brooks was amazing. The fact he was cocky enough to call it out even before it all started, like, there's only like X amount of people here that can even contend with me at this course. And just to go out there and just truck the place was absolutely amazing. He's special. I know some people don't like the cockiness, but I was telling Jesse before we recorded, I love Brooks Koepka. I love a guy that has that kind of ego, but he backs it up. There's a lot of guys that'll talk the talk and they can't walk at all. This guy just goes out there and he just puts it on. And when it looked like he was about to fall apart, he just starts hitting. It reminded me of the U.S. Open a couple years ago. At that, was it Shinnecock where they destroyed the golf course? And
no, that was Aaron Hills.
Well, Aaron Hills, yeah, it was him and DJ. And it was like every time it seemed to get close, Brooks would nail like a big putt or something like that. It was just the nails on that guy is unbelievable.
Yeah, DJ shot every round under par, which
the only guy, I think he's like the only guy out there. Still didn't win the tournament.
Right. He shot every round under par. Brooks had 2 of 4 under par. Of course, the first two were 63 and 65. So he was way out in front. I mean, the clinic that those two guys put on, I mean, to be 4 clear of a 3-way tie for third, it's quite impressive. I wish I would have played more DJ. I backed off him a little bit and put in more Tiger, which obviously we can talk about in just a second. But yeah, Brooks, dude, like, you know, when he said that early in the week, like there's basically 35 guys out here that he's not lying. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't call anybody out by name saying, you know, like it's quite obvious. None of the like local tour guys, local club pro guys are going to compete with these guys. We know that for a fact, throw them out. And then there's all kinds of other guys who have no chance. I mean, look at Harold Varner III, mm-hmm. for example. Love Harold Varner III. But what did he shoot on Sunday? 80?
81. 81, which, yeah. And like you said, we love HV3. Big fans of HV3. And he took that thing with such stride. Like, he was smiling all the time. I think he got – you didn't watch it on TV. They screwed him over. That television broadcasting crew and stuff, it's almost disrespectful the way they treated the guy that – had his first moment to kind of be on that stage, and sure, he scuffled, but give the man some respect. Like, you try being in those shoes on that course and never being there before. It was pretty bullish on their part, in my opinion.
I'm with you, but like, you know, that's what Brooks is talking about. Like, there's going to be guys like that who are up top there close who are going to absolutely fold on Sunday because they can't handle the pressure. They can't handle the golf course, so on and so forth. And that's the truth. And that's why you had, you know, two of the best players in the world at this point, obviously DJ and Brooks up top there. If you want to, we can move on to talking about Spieth now.
Yes, Jordan Spieth. It's a guy we've clowned on quite a bit, and we'll get to him in DraftKings later too, because there's least discussion for once, but he played great. And we talked about it recently. You know, he had his no laying up interview, and he was very, very open about the struggles he's had, about the critiques people have given him, so on and so forth. But he also was very confident on how close he was. Like, he's out there and he's like 90%, and then it just kind of blows up. Like, he's really, really close. He played great this week. I know Sunday didn't go quite to plan for him, but it didn't go to plan for anybody not named DJ. Basically, like, Brooks didn't even go to plan for him on Sunday. It just worked out for him.
Right.
Like, Spieth played really, really good golf, and to see him top 10 a major for the first time in quite a while, pretty impressive stuff. And it's got to at least bring on the idea that maybe, you know, going to Pebble for the Open, it'll be not normal Pebble conditions, but still a gettable golf course. You know, Spieth is at least back in the conversation, I think.
I agree. You know, obviously his putter was, I think he gained like 11 shots putting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's where, and you can call that whatever you want to, but if you have a strong putter, that's what he relied on for a long time when he was winning major championships a couple of years back, and kind of lost that a little bit, especially those short putts that we all know his struggles around the green. But I mean, I'm impressed that, you know, he finishes in a tie for third there with Patrick Cantlay and Matt Wallace. I feel like he can springboard off of that, and I hope he gets back to playing really good golf, because, you know, to have another guy like him in the mix is only going to be better for the game, whether you like him or not.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun to have him back. He was like one of the original young guns before they all started showing up. He kind of – like, he's only 25. That's the crazy part. He's still super young. People feel like just because he's been winning for so long that he's older than those guys, but there's a reason he does spring break with JT. They are the same age pretty much. Like, this is what they are. And so it'll be great to see Spieth back at it. You mentioned Cantlay there finishing third. this is a guy, like I was talking, you know, Riviera and those kind of courses. He's played great at those courses. He played great here. And we've seen him kind of putting together these pretty good rounds at these U.S. Open, PGA type events. He's close. He's really close. They were drooling all over him on Sunday, but a lot to like there. You mentioned LT Gray. And yes, LT Gray did not make the cut. One of the many that did not make the cut. Bryson, Finau, the list goes on and on.
Rahm,
yes. That's what I meant, not Finau, Rahm. Yeah, the list goes on and on with him. Tiger, he even said he didn't play on Wednesday because he wasn't up to it, which that concerns me already when, you know, he hasn't played since the Masters. He's already tired coming into the Bethpage. I know it's a grueling golf course, but this is something that's got to be kind of worrisome going forward, or am I overthinking this?
No, I agree. Like, did you know that he did not play?
No, this goes back to the whole reporting we never get. Like, how does no one mention he was not at the golf course on Wednesday?
I didn't know I didn't know. Like, that's the shit that, like, if you're a fucking reporter at the golf course and Tiger's supposed to show up and he doesn't, why are you not saying something?
Yes.
Like it's Tiger Woods.
Yeah, it's not. This isn't Harold Varner III. This is Tiger Woods. Like, this isn't Jason Duffner. This is Tiger Woods.
I mean, if we can't even get that, like, we're not going to get anything out of anybody about any injury ever. Which, whatever, it's a whole different ballgame. But yeah, man. I mean, like, obviously not playing since the Masters. So what? Basically a month off. Withdrawals from his tee time on Wednesday, so doesn't play a practice round. Like, I heard he only played like 9 holes all week.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something not right with him. He's saying he was sick, but I don't know.
He didn't look right to me. I thought, like, on, I think it was maybe Friday, because he played Friday afternoon with Brooks there. Coming, like, there was a video of him walking into the golf course. He looked like he was, like, stiff as shit. Like, he could barely walk. Like, I mean, like, not barely, but, I mean, it looked like he was having a little bit of a difficult time walking into the golf course. I didn't see a whole lot of signs of like back issues. I did watch a lot of that round on, especially Friday, but yeah, man, I mean, he was in position and just absolutely fucked up 10 through 12.
Yep. Well, 10 to be fair, 10 through 12 got a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
That was a nasty stretch, but yeah, it didn't look tough. It didn't look like Tiger at all.
No, it didn't look like the Tiger that we saw a month ago at the Masters. But of course, totally different golf course as well. I mean,
big time.
You know, you if you miss the, like, he hit, I think, let's see. Yeah, of course. Why would you have stats loaded on here? I mean, on Thursday, he hit 71% of the fairways. And I swear he hit like maybe 3 or 4 on Friday. And I mean, if you do that, you're going to be struggling to make some pars, because it was about a shot difference there, if you fairway to rough.
Yeah, and they were showing the AM PM waves had almost a, I think it was 2.5 to 3 stroke advantage this week.
Yeah, I saw that too.
It was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. Pretty big difference there, which there was ideas of it, but it didn't stand out that much.
I think and I saw even somebody kind of like weighted it based on like actually like how good the golfers are, and it still was a pretty big advantage. Wasn't really weather. I don't know what the main factor was there. Obviously, the weather kind of got a little bit weird over the weekend or whatever, but yeah, man. And then another guy who I was super high on, Rory McIlroy.
Yeah.
The longest straightest driver of the golf ball, you know, in the world, and can't hit greens.
His short game got him in a big, big way, like his approach game, I should say. Because he was there and he played well over the weekend. He got back to what I think 1 over overall or something. So yeah, he got back there, but he barely made the cut, like you're saying. It was wild. It was very wild. Cut what came in at +4, and there was guys dancing all around that thing.
He finished top 10, by the way.
Yeah, no, he still played great. And that's the scary thing, is Rory continued, like we talked about, a week in and week out, whenever he's in a tournament, that he's basically a top 10 machine this year. He just has like that one hiccup that just really screws it up. And it was kind of a combo of Thursday, Friday, because he played great over the weekend. It was just like, man, if he puts it together, there's not many guys that will beat him. Like, could you imagine him, Brooks, and DJ battling out on Sunday?
Yeah, God, that's what I wanted to see. That's what I wanted to see. Like, and that's what I was really expecting, because, like, I want somebody who hits it as far as Rory and straight. That happened to be Brooks this week, of course. He was the best driver probably on the golf course. But, yeah, Rory started on Friday, double bogey, double birdie. And he shot 40 on the front side, which is five over. And everybody was basically writing him off missing the cut, which I was too. And then he comes back with a 31 on the back.
Yeah, no, it was wild, but
got fucking 31 on the backside to make the cut, and like one inside the cut line wasn't even really a sweat with him as far as making the cut. But can you imagine shooting 40, 31 at Bethpage Black? Like,
I was gonna ask you. I was texting my buddy. I don't know if I'd break 110 at Bethpage Black.
Yeah, that's what I was like. 40 for me would be like the probably picture perfect day around that golf course. Like, I hit every shot as good as I can possibly hit it.
From which tees? From which tees?
From those tees. The tees that they play. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. In these conditions, as fast as the greens were, as tight as the fairways are, so on and so forth, as high as the rough is. I mean, they toughen the golf course up. But I know it doesn't play that hard every single day of the week.
They made that U.S. Open-esque almost.
Yeah, it was closer to that. And it just makes Brooks's performance even more impressive. So,
yep, he's a special breed. Last question, because I think as people could tell by our voices, we could talk about this tournament for a while. Because as a golf fan, to me, there was a lot of fun in this weekend. Like, there was a lot of cool things about it. You had the big names. You had some kind of the new guys were there. Xander, again, puts together a great weekend. There's so many guys, there's so many factors. It was fun to watch. It was really cool to watch. But they're in Wisconsin at Whistling Straits for the Ryder Cup next year. 2 years later, they go to Rome. 2 years after that, they come to Bethpage. There was a lot of talk about the fans being the way they were. How do you think, A, the course setup, I'd imagine it's be pretty similar to this because it favors the Bombers of the U.S. But B, how do you think that's going to play out? Because we've seen some of these U.S. fans be a little rough on the Euro crowd.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch. Those New Yorkers have zero give a shit. So that will be fun. That will most definitely be fun to see that tournament at that point. Brooks said he hopes he's there. Yeah, I would be highly surprised if he's not. He's falling off the face of the earth, if so.
If Wolfie is literally, wins every major two more times, just doesn't give a script F. He'll just say, I'm out. I'm going to bang my hot girlfriend and call it good.
One last thing before we wrap it up. How terrible is the PGA Championship app and coverage?
By far, it's worse than the regular PGA Tour app, which is like the PGA Tour app has its faults, but it gets the job done. The PGA Championship app was horrific. How hard is it for you guys to build an app, really?
Well, first of all, okay, so it's the PGA Championship. I know that it's not the PGA Tour, but let's just assume that they communicate a little bit. Like, why does the PGA Championship not go to the PGA Tour and say, hey, let's maybe have a little bit of a deal here where we kind of partner up and let's use PGA Tour Live, the same deal that you guys have going, and just plug everything on there. And then if you guys don't care, let's get together and make an app that's half-assed worth of shit.
That would make too much sense, probably.
I'm with you,
man. It was like I finally stopped really kind of – I like when I'm working Thursday and Friday out of my truck, I try to check scores as often as I can. And I got to the point where like, you know what? I guess I'm actually going to work today. And I was stuck in my game. It was really disappointing because I look forward to that Thursday and Friday moment.
Well, the worst is like – so in order to watch it, you have to watch it online. That's the only place. Like in the morning time, obviously it came on at 1 o'clock, which is awesome that you can watch golf from like 1 to 6 or 7 or 1 o'clock or whatever in the evening. But you have to go and stream it. It's one group that they're showing per stream. So like for me, I pull it up on my Xbox. I'm just watching that one group, but then it reloads and won't stay on. And every commercial, it's going to kick you back off and you have to get back on and there's another Omega commercial. I mean, it was just an absolute clusterfuck.
Yeah, it was Omega. It was their show. It was the Omega show.
And Sophie.
Yeah.
Talk about some millennials and credit card debt need to.
Yeah, they had their target demo. That's for damn sure.
God.
Yeah, it was rough. I'm with you. It was really, really rough. But
how many days till the Masters?
No shit. Not soon enough. But hopefully we have this much to talk about after the U.S. Open here in a couple months. That'll be awesome. But for now, We have the Charles Schwab Challenge this week, Jesse. It is a hell of an event, but actually a loaded field. 122 golfers, but a loaded field of golfers coming to Colonial this weekend. Before I get into the course preview, give us some past event history on this wonderful, wonderful event.
Yeah, we'll say too, No Laying Up put out a good
recap
feature. Did you see that on the Colonial? Did you see that?
No, I did not.
So it's like 9 minutes long, and they just talk about the golf course and kind of the history, and they interview some people that are involved with the actual golf course and stuff. And what happened was last year, basically, they almost lost this golf tournament because Dean and DeLuca, which, imagine this, they went out of business.
Oh, surprise.
Yeah. If do you remember when I was writing for the Fantasy Degens and I was making fun of Dean and DeLuca?
Yeah.
Because they had like $210 caviar you could order and all kinds of just – it was like one of those meal prep delivered to your door things, but for like
– oh, nice.
Like rich people, I think. And imagine that didn't work. So they lost that, and so they almost lost the tournament. Well, apparently they just went to the town of Fort Worth and like, hey, we need some help. So basically the community stepped up and said, yep, we're not losing this. So last year Fort Worth was just the city of Fort Worth. It was the sponsor. Justin Rose is your champion, 20 under. Beat Brooks Koepka by 3 shots. Brooks is not playing this week, of course. But the year before that, Kevin Kisner was a champion, 10 under par, 1 shot over Sean O'Hare, John Rahm, Jordan Spieth. 2016, Jordan Spieth was your champion, 17 under, 3 shots over Harris English. And it used to be called the Crown Plaza Invitational for a long time. Chris Kirk was a champion. Adam Scott, Boo Weekly, Zach Johnson's won it twice. Phil Mickelson's won this twice. Rory Sabatini, back in 2007, was a champion.
Oh, good old Sabs. Love us some Sabs around this podcast. Well,
there's also a little foreshadowing for you, for the listeners who are regular. They know what's coming up.
Yes, it's coming. There's actually a lot of at least Bubba favorites in this tournament that'll fit this mold very, very well. All right, the course, you mentioned it, Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth, Texas, hosted this event since 1946. They par 70 course, around 7,200 yards, so not long at all. It's a shot maker's course. You got to be very accurate. You got to be on the right sides of the fairways to get your approaches in. They're tree-lined fairways for the most part, and the rough can be very penal at times, especially with considering the greens as small as they are. Some of the smaller greens on tour. So to hit the greens, to get the greens to stick, you're going to want to be in the fairway. It's a less-than-driver course, unless you're John Rahm. All the quotes I read, he doesn't care. He's going to bomb it and cut corners and try to set him up for even if he's in the rough, it's a short shot in. We've talked about that with these guys before. But for the most part, less-than-driver-type course, it fits all molds. We've seen similar courses at like Copperhead, RBC Heritage, all these par 70-ish, 71 courses where you got to be very, very accurate off the tee and precise with your location. That's what you're going to get here. It is bent grass greens, which is very kind of rare for the Texas area, but that's what the designers wanted. Average speeds around 12 on the stem, and they're tiny. Like I said, they don't want them to be super fast because usually what happens is it's super windy here. You said Justin Rose shot 20 under last year. There was no wind, and that's, you know, Texas this time of year, usually a very, very windy situation. But, you know, a couple weeks ago at the Byron Nelson, not too windy. So we'll see how this one goes this year. If it's not windy, it can be a scoring paradise. Otherwise, from all the reports you hear, this is a – you're happy with par. You mentioned some of the scores that have won here. There's been single-digit under pars that have won here based on stuff like that. So keep that in mind. There's 84 bunkers on the course, 4 water hazards to keep in play, but those usually aren't a huge issue, but it's all about hitting the fairways. This is the lowest eagle rate on tour since 2014. And birdies, like I said, aren't huge here either, but eagles are very, very rare at this golf course. And if the wind kicks up, it can get nasty, nasty here. And looking at the early weather right now, Wednesday, you got winds 15 to 20 miles an hour, 25 mile an hour gusts. Friday, 15 to 20 miles an hour. The weekend, low mid-teen winds with gusts up to 20 miles an hour, same on Sunday. So you're looking around 15 to 25 mile an hour winds almost every day, which could make things very, very entertaining when things get going. Jesse, what are some of the key stats you're looking for this week?
It's more of an accuracy type of course. A lot of tree line fairways, like you said, and you just got to kind of keep it in the fairway, and a lot of dog legs. When Rahm says he hits drivers because he's just blasting it over trees, which were never meant to be hit over, but obviously he's John Rahm and he can do whatever the fuck he wants to. So, yeah, like missed the cut at the PGA Championship. So more accuracy than distance is important, in my opinion. I mean, greens regulation, like usual. Also, wait, the long-term birdie score on or birdie score on labs, long and recent. And then scrambling, because you're going to miss greens. I mean, you're not going to hit every green, so you got to be able to get up and down. And also par four scoring is important here. The majority of the holes are obviously par fours. It's a par 70, like you said, 7,200 yards. Got to be able to throw some birds in there on some par fours, because the scores, I mean, they get pretty low here. Like I said, 20 under, 17 under, 12 under. It just kind of depends on the weather, I would think.
Yep, that's the deal. Talking about FanshareSports.com. Again, if you want to go try out Fanshare Sports, use promo code ALWAYSPRESS, all one word, underscored. Get you 25% off over there at Fanshare Sports. Good stuff they have going. We reference them a lot. And we like what they have, and we'll talk about some of the key features this week, looking at the research tools they have. Guys, for current form over the last six events in this field, leading DraftKings scores. You got Molly leading the way at 98 DraftKings points. Second place is Kisner at 82, so a 16-point gap. That tells you the run Molly was on. Sabatini's third. There you go. Fowler's fourth. Matt Jones is fifth. Jordan Spieth sixth. Graham McDowell seventh. John Rahm eighth. Johnny Vegas ninth. And Kokrak, who's a cut-making machine, is 10th when you're looking at current form. When you look at course history, again, they play this here forever. Since DraftKings has been around since 2015, took the recent DraftKings scores. Last year was Justin Rose's only year here, put up 140, but Spieth's played all four tournaments here. He's averaging almost 98 DraftKings points per event. Kisner's averaging almost 88 over the four events. Kevin Na's played three events, averaging 84.5. Tway is averaging 84. Harris English has played three events here, averaging 83, so a lot to like there with some recent form guys. And if you do current form and course history mixed, Jordan Spieth is bright green on that board. Harris English, Ricky Fowler comes in well. Joel Dahman, Graham McDowell are some of those guys with really good current form and course history here at the Colonial. All right, Jesse, let's get into the DraftKings picks. That's what everyone wanted to hear about 45 minutes ago. So we'll give them what they want. 10K and above. Justin Rose, 11-4. John Rahm, 11-2. Spieth, 10-9. Fowler, 10-5. And Schauffele, 10,000. Lots to like up here. Where are you going?
Obviously, defending champion, Justin Rose. I don't know. Like, he's odd to me. And obviously, he might be that way to everybody. So he might be a good time to jump on board. Finished 29th last week, had a really shitty weekend, shot 8 over on the weekend at the PGA Championship, finished 3rd at the Wells Fargo though. And it's kind of pick your poison with him. I don't mind him at all. John Rahm coming off the missed cut. Be interesting to see how high owned he is. Ricky at 10.5 will be popular. I'd say Xander will be popular at 10,000 as well. Jordan Spieth, man, I think he's the guy that I'm kind of eyeing here. You got the course history, forms coming around. I hope a lot of people will see that, you know, he was just gaining massive amounts of strokes with his putter and say he can't do that again. Maybe he can't. But, you know, if we can grab him at less than 10%, there's potential that, a win is around the corner for him. So why not be at a place where he's finished second twice and won in the last 4 years?
Yep, I'm 100% with you. Justin Rose, he's in play for sure, one of the best guys out there, but his form is just weird. He, at a course like at Bethpage, it should have fit him well, you know, just kind of tinkered around there, played well at the Wells Fargo. You said it missed the cut at the Masters, played well at the Players, barely played pretty bad at the Arnold Palmer, missed the cut at Saudi. It's been a weird run for Justin Rose, but 11-4, he can be in play. I really do like Jordan Spieth this week. It's very interesting here at 10-9. I could regret this. As most listeners know, I'm not a big Jordan Spieth guy, but I respect what he's been doing. He's been putting together week in and week out. You can see it coming close, and it came through last week. You can go for that again here at 10-9 and hopefully get him at some low ownership, as you said. And then Xander at 10K, I do like him quite a bit. I have a feeling I won't be up in the 10Ks, but if I do, you know, a T16 at the PGA. He played well at RBC. Well, not well, but T63 kind of stumbled over the weekend there. But, you know, T2 at the Masters, missed the cut at the Players in a 14th, a 15th, a 10th, a 25th, and a 1st. He's played really, really well this year. It's overlooked most times, might not in this event, but $10,000 for Xander. I'm a big fan. And that's how you pronounce his name, if anybody's curious. It's Xander Schauffele. So $10,000, I can definitely look that direction. All right, let's head to the 9K range. You got Franny at 98, Finau at 96, Bryson at 94, Paul Casey, your boy, at 93, Kiz at 92, Poulter at 91, and Usti at 9,000. This is why I might not go up to 10K, but what are you liking in this range?
Yeah, there's a lot to like here and also in the 8Ks. I'll leave the Franny talk up to you. Tell me if it's a Franny week or not, because I don't ever know. Tony's probably fine. He's never had a whole heck of a lot of success around here, 29th, 34th, and 19th in his three appearances in 17, 16, and 15. Man, again, like outside of the Masters, he has not done shit this year. And paying $9,600 for him, I can't stomach it, so I'll have none. But Bryson, two straight missed cuts. That's what the fuck's going on with him, man?
Yeah, you know, he's one of those guys. I think he can, as meticulous and like mathematical as he is at things, like one little thing off could really screw him up till he figures it out again. I have a feeling. I think that might be where he's at right now.
Did you hear him bitching about how long they had that course last week?
No, I did not. But that's something Bryson sounds like he would do.
I mean, he was quoted as saying basically they're making it too long.
What's he want them to do? Make it a pitch and putt?
I don't know. It's beyond me because he hits the ball far.
And before he showed up, he knew what the course was going to look like.
I don't know. He baffles me. And so, again, no on him. Paul Casey, yes. $9,300. Yes, please. Ian Poulter, $9,100. Yes, please. 20% owned last week. Missed cut. Got him a couple days off. Down in Texas again. He's not had a whole – I mean, he hasn't played here since 2016. He missed the cut then, but he did finish 5th in 2015. He has another 8th in 2009. So he has had a couple top 10s here. But I'll go back to him. Before the PGA Championship, he had two straight top 12s at the Masters and at the Heritage. Obviously missed the cut on the number – or two shots above the number, excuse me, at the PGA Championship. So – for me in this range, it's Paul Casey and Ian Poulter.
Yeah, Franny at 98. I'd say usually I'll play him in all formats. It's GPP only right now for me just because since that API win, it's been a roller coaster. He does play good in events like this and courses like this. This is a course – Franny hits it farther than people think, but he's not a bomber. This course fits him very well. He's a very good accuracy guy off the tee. So everything lines up really, really, really well here. It's just a matter of where his game's at, and it's kind of all over the board these days. But I still like him a lot at $9,800 because he is a guy that can win this event, and that's something you want when you're paying up for it. So I do like him. I'm not, like, in love with him like usual, but I think Franny is a really good play. And I think you'll get him at kind of lower ownership here just because I think guys are either going to go up to the 10K range or they're going to go down to some other guys we talked about, like Finau even, who's always popular. So I think Franny at 98 is in play this week, but I'm with you. I really, really like Paul Casey. I mentioned how Valspar – some of those par 70 accuracy courses are big. Well, for those keeping track at home, hey, Jesse, who's won the last two Valspars?
Paul Casey.
Yes, thank you. Just checking. Just want to check that one out there. And outside of that Masters cut that blew everybody away and the Players cut, just two random weird cuts, he's played outstanding this year, like really, really good this year. So Casey at 93, I like. Keep an eye on the ownership there, but that's a good one. And then Poulter at 91, like you read my mind. I think there's a reason why we've been podcasting long enough together. Is we are on the same page often. But Ian Poulter at 91, a guy that just grinds it out, you know, a missed cut. Those couple days off might have done him well because a T10 at the Heritage, T12 at the Masters, did scuffle at the Players, and T23, a third, a sixth, a third, a sixth, playing great golf. $9,100 might be a little too pricey for some people because they don't think of Poulter in that echelon. But I think it's a great play at $9,100. I think he's cash game viable, GPP upside. So I'm with you. Poulter, Casey, my top two guys here. Sprinkle in some Molly for that Italian seasoning. Enjoy yourself.
I will say, too, you know, I mean, obviously, Poulter missed cut. You didn't have to grind it out for 2 days.
That's huge.
At Bethpage.
I meant to ask you that before we started. The thing with Spieth that worries me, and I want to ask your opinion on other guys. Guys that did grind it out for 4 days at Bethpage, flying to Texas to play here, I know they're here because they want to be here because they don't have to be here. But what's your thoughts on that? Because that was a grueling 4 days of golf.
See, I would say Spieth, like Spieth is a little bit of a special case and all that because he finished third. So, and he's not been playing well. He gets a third in a major. I think he comes in with a lot of energy and is ready to go. Rom got 2 days off, so he's totally fine. Rose, again, I don't know. Ricky, where did he finish? Where did Ricky finish last week?
Let me check for you real quick.
36. Yeah, he shot 77 on Sunday to fall back there, which obviously maybe he got caught up in the wind. I don't know, but he had a decent week, so don't worry about too much about him. The guy that I would worry about is like kind of like Mully. Now with Mully, the reason why he did not finish very highly is he lost a lot of strokes on the greens putting. Totally different surface here too, so. His ball striking was okay though. So I don't mind it, but
I'm honestly not weighing the stats from last week too heavily. Like those guys played a tough golf.
No, I mean, it's in the miscuts and finishing really is not, but what I'm saying is I think Franny's got a good bounce back spot there. I think Spieth just has an extra jolt of energy that the rest of the guys maybe don't have.
Okay, I can feel that. Let's go into the 8K range here. Mr. I make every cut so far this year. Jason Kokrak, $8,900. Our boy Sabs got the price decrease from a couple weeks ago, $8,800. Griot at 87, Piercy at 86, Fitzmagic at 85, Palmer at 84, Reavy 83, Domin 82, Billy Ho 81, and Kevin Na, $8,000. Like you said, lots to like in the 8K range. Where are you going with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of plays here, some weird ones, but also some really good ones. I'll start at the top with Kokrak and Sabatini. I probably don't have to go. If you listen to this podcast regularly, you know my simple love for both these guys. Some people may say Kokrak is due for a miscut. I don't know. I just feel like he's played this golf course a lot, so he knows it. 32nd miscut, 55th miscut, 18th. So if you go by the pattern there, he would miss the cut this year. But I like him quite a bit at 8,900. I think he'll be popular. Don't mind him in cash. Sabatini, the same thing. Don't mind him in cash. I don't know how popular he'll be, but he's got okay course history. 20th miscut, 10th miscut. But he's playing a lot better golf this year than he has been for a long time. Obviously, past winter two in 2007, like we mentioned earlier, there's your foreshadowing. One of my other favorite plays. So those two are – Up top with my favorite plays, and then Scott Piercy, $8,600. Miscut last year, but did finish seventh here in 2017. Excuse me. Played last week 41st, but coming off a second and a third at the Byron Nelson and the Heritage in successive tournaments that he played in. They weren't back to back tournaments, but the two prior to that. So he's trending. Fitzpatrick, whatever you want to call him. I never get him right. I'm going to skip over him. Chez Reavy, man. Like I was looking at that fucking leaderboard, and that son of a bitch was up the leaderboard at Bethpage Black for a while. Where'd he finish? 14th. I mean, he finished 14th.
In his last three events, he's coming in great form right now.
Dude averaging, what, 289 off the tee last week.
Not a bomber at all.
I mean, how does he do that? Hit 50%.
13 birdies and 15 bogeys.
Hit 50% greens in regulation. Like, I don't even understand how that's possible. But two back-to-back weeks there on pretty tough golf courses for Chez. Massive price increase. Absolutely insane price increase from $6,600 last week to $83 this week. I think he's a GPP play. Only for me anyways. And kind of like a sneaky pivot off one of these chalky guys up top. Joel Dahman, too, at 8,200. I was really surprised when I saw his price, but I did see the odds, and it makes sense. He's playing good golf, too, and he finished 20th here last year in his only appearance. I've almost named them all, skipping Billy Horschel, going to Kevin Na. You tell me, dude. I'd never get Kevin Na right. You're the Kevin Na whisperer versus me, so you tell me. I don't know.
Yes, Kevin Na is one of my favorite plays this week. $8,000. I believe we've talked about course history and how you like a golf course. Kevin Na, if you go to reading all the quotes over there at Future of Fantasy, it's just got list over list after list of all the quotes from this tournament. Kevin Na loves this golf course. And it fits perfectly.
He shot 61 here last year, too.
Yeah, he finished, I think, third or fourth here last year.
Fourth, yeah.
He loves this golf course. It makes sense for Knott because he's a very – when his irons are on, he's one of the best iron players in golf. And when working it out around the green, he missed the cut at the PGA, which could be a nice bounce-back spot for him. And he missed it one off the number. So, you know, he's got a 72 and a 73. All things considered, that's really not horrible for the golf he saw out there. Like, he could have really butchered that thing. And then he went T35 at the Byron Nelson, T10 at Heritage, 46 at the Masters. So he's playing Kevin Na type golf, and he loves this golf course. We've seen him play well at courses he likes. This would be one of them. $8,000, I think he should be priced higher in this event. So I'm curious to see his well, like in the mid to high eights, not like outside of the eights, but I think he should be up there with the Piercy's of the world and whatnot. So
wow, okay.
I like Kevin Na a lot this week at $8,000. Okay. Dahman isn't played 82. I'm curious to see how chalky he is because – I've already heard the Pat Mayo bump on that one, but
on who?
On Dahman.
Dahman. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But Sabatini, 100% on board there. With Sabatini, $8,800. All this dude does is dominate. T5 at the Byron, T18 at Wells Fargo, T10 at Heritage, a 36, a 39th, an 18th. He dominates and he makes cuts. Like cash game, very, very much in play. It's crazy.
Let's back off the domination there.
I'm excited.
Dominating.
Dominating for his expectations. Cuts. For his expectations.
February. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I'm with you. With. No, I mean, I'm high on Sabs this week. So, especially a week off, he'll be ready to go.
Yeah, you can make a 8K lineup here. Like, Kokrak at 89 is outstanding.
100%.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun with this real quick. So, Kokrak at 89. You got Sabs at 88. We're going to put some Kevin Na here real quick at 8,000. But I want to mention, I'll put Piercy in for you at 86. I'm not 100% on board with him this go around, but the other guy I wanted to mention, Emiliano Grillo, $8,700, one of the better approach guys out there. And when he's like an RCB light, just finished 23rd at PGA, 33rd at the Heritage, 26th at the Players, coming in really, really good form. Another guy that really likes this golf course. He was another guy you could hear quoted quite a bit. So if you play Grillo, Piercy, Na, and Sabs and Kokrak, it leaves you 7K. And there are a few guys down there I don't hate. So there's options there for you, but bottom line, I like Kokrak, I like Sabs, I like Griot, and I'm a big fan of Kevin Na this week. So a lot to like here in this 8K range. All right, let's jump into the 7K. Give me some 7,500 and above.
Yeah, I'm just going to stay on brand. For me, it's Daniel Berger again. I know he had a shitty Sunday. Shot 78-78 over the weekend. Absolutely took my face off. I mean, he was up to 4 under. He was inside the top 5, I think, after the first couple of days. Again, I've mentioned this before. If he can just put together all 4 days, I really like his chances to be back in the contention. And at $7,600, I'll be more than happy to bite on that. And then Pat Perez is $7,700. Played this golf course a lot. Kind of some mixed results and some miscuts and shit like that, but I feel like he's figuring it out. Obviously did not play well on the weekend again. Another guy. Yeah. I mean, 76, 77 on the weekend for a nice little 13 over weekend there, but 12th at the Byron Nelson and 8th at the Wells Fargo in the 2 weeks prior to that, coming off the injury here. So I like him to bounce back, and I hope people see that 78th or whatever and kind of write him off. I don't know if it'll happen or not, but those are the two guys for me here. I don't know if this course fits Kiradec or not. He's never played here. So I just to go ahead and answer your question, I don't know.
I'm glad you beat me to it this time. Yeah,
he proved me wrong last week. I was like, I'm worried about this guy, you know, and he finished 41st, which at $6,500 was not terrible for his price. You know,
no, wasn't bad at all. I'm with you on Berger. I'm starting to buy into the fact he's real close, really, really close to being that guy that should not be $7,600. So I like the Berger call. I like Pat Perez flat bill at 77. I'm on board with both of those. A couple more to mention, kind of on these short courses, coming in good form. Graham McDowell at 78 is a guy you could take a piece at because it's not a bomber's paradise, and he fits that kind of mold very, very well. And even T29 at a bomber's paradise last week. So Graham McDowell at 78 is interesting. And the only other one I'll mention, I'm just curious because we were all over him earlier this year. It's been kind of a roller coaster of late, but he finished 16th last week. Abraham Answer at 76, I think, has some tremendous upside, at least in a GPP at this event. So I'll have my eye on him as well. What do you got below 7,500?
Starting at 74. I mean, Jimmy Walker, I rarely get him right. I played him in one lineup, just randomly threw it in it last week. I don't even remember why, but he finished 23rd at the PGA Championship. He had a solid week. I mean, even par, one over, three over, to finish inside the top 25 there. So, but his, I mean, he's not had a whole lot of success around here. 20th, 29th, 65th, 10th in his last four starts here. So, I don't know. Jason Duffner is interesting to me, coming off a missed cut, and two straight missed cuts at this golf course. But this was obviously, this is post his fourth at the Wells Fargo, where he was leading or tied for the lead going into Sunday. Just looking at some course history stats on Fantasy Golf National, he just kind of jumped out there. So I think he's interesting at 7,400, and I doubt a lot of people will play him, GPP only. Matt Jones is another guy who I mean, like, he's playing well, but his course history isn't great. So GPP again. Russell Knox, he's got good course history around here, but he's coming off the miscut at the PGA Championship. Again, might be a blessing. So don't mind him. And then Jim Furyk, man, at $7,300.
I was looking at him earlier.
Another guy who's kind of, you know, he's missed two straight cuts, but you would think that this would kind of fit him, where he's not having to hit it that far and he can just hit a bunch of greens and maybe make some putts. Moving down the list, Brian Stewart at 71 would be my last pick here. Course history is pretty good. 32nd, 24th, 62nd missed cut in his last four starts at this golf course. And has made three straight on tour. So at $7,100, I don't mind him.
All right, I'm with you on Jimmy Walker. Seems like he's starting to get it back together. He can be tilting at times, but he's starting to get off the tee much, much better, much more consistently. So Jimmy at 74, someone I'll take a look at. You mentioned Matt Jones and his bad course history. I'll take the current form and hope that one rules out here. But, yes, there is concern there, but he's just a cut-making machine right now. So a lot to like there at 7,400. Even if you want to go with the Aussie narrative in Texas, you can go there as well. But Jones at 74 is on my list. A couple others. I really like Danny Lee. I'm kind of glad he trunks me over the weekend.
I was just clicking his name, dude. How about him being – Was he second place after the first day, right? What did he shoot?
He was 64 day one, and the 74, 71, 77 to finish T36. But this guy's an iron player. I've played him in a lot of these shorter courses. You know, Valero, he finished T7, Honda Classic T36, Heritage 41. Hasn't played a ton of these other tournaments I was looking at, but $7,300, definitely an upside there. Don't mind Danny Lee's had some decent course history as well at this event. Yep.
He's got pretty good course history, 14th, 6th, 22nd, 10th.
Yeah, so that's definitely someone I don't mind at $7,300. What's your thoughts on CT Panks? This is a guy we know that has a good iron game. You know, he won at the Heritage. That's a shorter par 70 type golf course. Played well at the Byron Nelson, Valspar T42. So kind of these par 70 accuracy courses, he makes cuts and does okay, and he's $7,300. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I don't mind him. Finished 20th here last year. So, I mean, I'm not super high on him, but for a GPP, if you wanted to sprinkle some in, if you're playing in a bunch of lineups.
Yeah, so there's some guys in here in the low sevens I don't mind. Like two others that I have written down here. Sam Burns at 71, coming in pretty good form. I keep an eye on him. And then another guy on good form that probably is not going to win it for you, but every now and then can make a run, especially early in the tournament. He's at T35 at the Byron Nelson, T31 at Wells Fargo, missed the cut at the Heritage, T36 at Valero. Marty Party Laird at 7K is an interesting one, especially if it gets windy. He doesn't mind playing in the wind at all, so that could pay up big time for you. And again, they're talking 15 to 20 mile an hour wind, so keep an eye on Marty Party Laird at 7,000. But yeah, Jimmy Walker, Matt Jones, Lee, Pan, Burns, Laird would be the ones for me down below. All right, the 6K range, there's a handful of guys I can make an argument for. Who are you looking for?
It's just starting at the top. Strelman at $6,900. He rates out good in the models. The only reason I click on him, but 76 and 18th in his last two appearances. He's got a lot, about as many missed cuts as he has made cuts here, but 45th and a couple of top 10s, you know, previous to that on tour this year. So 45th, 6th, 6th. This year on tour. Brian Harman at $6,900. Course history is good, really good for somebody who's $6,900. He's just, his current form is really odd and strange. And, you know, so do you want to take a chance with him? Maybe. I don't mind it. Sean Stefani as well. Made all four cuts in all four appearances at this golf course. Is coming off two straight top 20s. Keep an eye on him. And Taylor Gooch at 60. What's he at? 60. Yeah. 60. It was just right there. And of course, I just scroll absolutely past it and it won't let me go back up to it. Two more, actually. Gooch and then Lashley. Yeah. 67. Missed the cut here last year. Just he's high enough on the model to consider. And then Nate Lashley at 64. He's never played here, but he's made two straight cuts on tour. So 29th and 45th in his last two starts at 6,400. Don't mind him. I like
him. I don't mind Streelman at all. I can see that as a good play. K.H. Lee at $6,900. I don't mind him as well, coming in really good form, actually. T22, 260. He's made five straight cuts, essentially, with some top 20s in there as well. So K.H. Lee is on the list at 69. Von Taylor loves those short course accuracy paradises at 67 and has some good course history here. So keep an eye on Vaughn at 67. Bo Hostler, the local kid, played really well here last year at 67. You can look at him as well. A couple others, Doug Gim. He went to college, I believe, at Texas. He played on the web quite a bit, but he's played really well recently on his chances on tour. He's made three of five cuts on tour, including a T12 at the Byron Nelson. Missed the cuts at Pebble Beach, T20 at Farmers. Again, hasn't played a ton of events, but played really well at the Byron Nelson and I believe at the University of Texas. So he knows his course most likely very, very well at 6,700. And then the last guy I'll mention, I'm going to go all the way down to $6,100. It's a bit dicey, but Richard Wawrinski at $6,100 is a guy that, as a punt, I've seen him play. Like, you know, he missed the cut at the PGA, but then T38 at Wells, T58 at Heritage, T61 at Valero, missed the Valspar, T47 at Players. It's a complete shot in the dark, but it's a $6,100 shot in the dark. All I need him to do is make the cut at $6,100. So that's where I'll be going if I go all the way down there, but I probably won't. All right, let's recap the pricing real quick, Jesse. 10K and above, give me one guy.
I'm just going to say Jordan Spieth.
I like that. I'll let you have Jordan. I'll take Xander. Xander, okay. Shoffley. 9K, give me one.
Poulter.
Paul Casey. All right, 8K, give me two.
Piercy and Kokrak.
Sabatini and Nah. All right, 7K, give me three.
Berger, Perez, and Duff Daddy.
I'm going to go Berger, Perez, and Danny Lee. Give me one guy from the 6Ks.
Streelman.
Yeah, I like that. I'd say, I got to pick just one. I'm going to go Gim. I don't know why. If it wasn't him, it was going to be K.H. Lee, but I'll go one. I'll go Gim. That's my guy. All right, if you're going to start a GPP lineup out, you got to start with three guys. Who are you starting with?
Spieth, Berger, and then I'm going to throw Piercy in there as well.
It's funny. I have Xander, Berger, and Griot. That'd be my three to start with. If you're starting a cash game lineup, who are your three?
I would start in the 8Ks, and almost like we were talking about earlier, I don't mind that a bit. I think Sabs is it's really weird that $8,800 Sabatini is cash viable, but he is. Kokrak as well, and then Piercy.
Yeah, I got Casey, Sabs, and Nah. That'd be my three starters. All right, let's talk some picks to win here. The odds are pretty interesting. Who you got?
Yeah, you know, if you're going for more of a favor, what's the odds on Jordan at this point?
At 14-1, and he was one of the ones I had written down as well.
Yeah,
it's a little small.
Yeah, it's really, really fucking hard to bet Jordan Spieth at 14-1. Yeah. At this point, I mean, you know, maybe he wins. Maybe you can parlay that or something. I wouldn't mind that. But so otherwise, what kind of odds you got on Sabs then?
Sabs is, I just saw him, 40-1.
What about Piercy?
Piercy is 55-1.
Yeah, those would be my two shots there.
I got Poulter at 40-1. Can you guess my other one?
Kevin Na.
Yep, Kevin Na at 70-1. That's the other one I'm looking at. And I don't think I'm going 08 either with him yet because I have other options, but I'm tempted. I really am very tempted, but we'll see how that plays out. All right, Jesse, any final thoughts for this week's Charles Schwab Challenge?
I don't, man. Other than we got like a month till the U.S. Open?
Yeah, it's Father's Day weekend, so that's what, the last weekend in July, I think? Something along those lines.
You mean in June?
Sorry, yeah, it's in June. Let me check. Wait, give me 1 second here. Let me find my ticket for it to go.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, wait. Here it is. Oh, yeah. The U.S. Open ticket right here. God. Yeah, this is on Sunday's edition. So June 16th is Sunday. Yeah.
Fucking believable flex from you there.
That's when the U.S. Open is.
Jeez. All right. That's it, man. Other than that, like, these majors drained me, man. So
yeah, it was an exhausting, emotional weekend, but it was a fun one. I really enjoyed it. We've had an awesome Masters and an awesome PGA. Like, the majors have done what they're supposed to do. That's all we can ask for as golf fans. So pretty awesome stuff. And everybody, go check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. The podcast is at Always Press DFS. I am at BD Intrick. And if you wanted to check out fansharesports.com, Always Press, one word, 25% off. But a rating review on iTunes would be great. This was the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast previewing the 2019 Charles Schwab Challenge. Catch you guys later. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever